You are listening to episode number 285 of Better Blood Sugars with Delaine MD.
Welcome to Better Blood Sugars with Delaine MD, where you can learn strategies to lower your blood sugars and improve your overall health. I'm your host, Dr. Delaine Vaughn. Ladies, if you know you're capable of doing badass things at work and for your family, but you're confused and frustrated with why you can't seem to stop eating the chocolate cake, this podcast is for you. Let's talk.
Welcome to the podcast. I am so glad that you're taking some time for you and your health today. As always, I feel really privileged that you're deciding to spend that time with me, and I hope you learn something that's helpful and beneficial for you and your health. Today, I want to discuss why you are diabetic. Lots of women think that it's their genetics or some other cause. As a physician, I've watched thousands of people worry and suffer and inevitably die from many diseases. And what I've realized is most of the diseases of modern times are really due to lifestyle choices. And for whatever reason, people believe that their ability to change and create the health that they want is outside of their control. Whether they believe that the disease is related to their genes, whether they believe that they're addicted to a substance that they cannot walk away from, whatever it is, they feel that making the changes that they need to make to be healthy and the way they want to be healthy is outside of their control. A lot of times we hear these stories about genes and our genetics being stacked against us, or we believe that there's an addiction that we are not strong enough to overcome. We believe that stopping the action that's creating this disease is not within our reach. And so many people believe this. And this idea, of course, is supported by the medical industry, which most people look to as a valued and trusted expert source for their health. And the fact is, it just simply is not. The medical industry, at least in the Western society in the United States, is really, really, really good at disease care, and that's it. It is not really, really, really good at creating health. Distinguishing between those two things is really important. Because the medical industry, or the quote unquote healthcare industry, is really focused at controlling disease, it, you know, promotes these beliefs that keep us relying, like feeling out of control to change our experience with certain substances that are really creating our disease. So in the case of diabetes, the food that we're consuming is creating our disease. But many people can also see this very clearly in diseases like COPD and heart disease and nicotine and cigarette smoking. Like, we see that clear connection between the substance of nicotine and cigarettes and COPD and lung cancer and heart disease. We see it with drugs and alcohol. These chemicals, including the food, are really wreaking havoc on our biology. We also see this in other areas. We find ourselves feeling engaged or addicted to other behaviors, gambling, shopping, social media, pornography, all of these things. And they're wreaking havoc, maybe not on our biology, but on our relationships. We find that we feel very helpless. Like, many people in these situations where they feel like they can't let go of it, they feel helpless in the presence of these chemicals or of these behaviors. These feelings of helplessness are really supported by ideas in our society. Like, it's hard to have control in those situations, or it's nearly impossible to change, or it runs in my family. These beliefs, these ideas really keep us stuck and sick. And I'm not here today to argue the heritability of addiction or diabetes. I am really here to challenge this feeling of helplessness that these beliefs about being out of control or impossible to change, or it runs in my genes and my family, those beliefs create feelings of helplessness to create the change that we're looking for. If fixing your diabetes is a priority in 2025, changing these beliefs is imperative to that. And that's what I want to talk about today. I want to talk about really what is causing type 2 diabetes in human beings. Not just in you, not just in women, not just in men, but in human beings. I truly believe that type 2 diabetes is a normal biological response to human beings eating foods that are not biologically normal to them. If human beings ate food the way other animals of the earth do it. They eat the food that the earth creates for them. If human beings did that, they would not have diabetes, at least type 2 diabetes. But what we do is we eat foods that are highly ultra processed and ultra adulterated, right? Like we don't take food from the ground and eat it. We do things, we change that food. And those changes that we make to those foods is what creates type 2 diabetes. And when we can see that and see the science behind that, then we can kind of decide where is the control that we do or don't have. So today I want to talk about what causes type 2 diabetes and how type 2 diabetes is caused. And then I want to encourage you to determine, like evaluate and consider how much control you actually have over your diabetes and how much control do you want to exhibit over it. Before we get started, I always want to remind you that if you are medicated for your type 2 diabetes, you must be very, very careful when you're making the dietary changes that I'm going to recommend in today's podcast. You have been medicated because of the way you've eaten in the past. If you change the way you eat, you're going to need to change those meds. If you don't, you can get very, very sick, the kind of sick that looks like hospitalizations and even death. And you're not making these changes to create death in your life. You're making it to create health. So you need to be careful. Okay. What that means is you need to start keeping a clear log of your blood sugars, and you need to call your primary care, the doctor that gave you the medications, or the provider that gave you the medications for your diabetes. You need to call them, and you need to determine with them how they want you to share your blood sugar logs with them and how they intend to share medication changes with you. There's going to be a line of communication open up. Every provider does this a little differently, but you need to get a clear line of communication open with your provider in order to stay safe if you are medicated for your type 2 diabetes. If you're not sure what to eat, if you struggle to figure out, like, oh, Delaine says that we should be eating food that the earth makes for us. If you're not sure what is included and what isn't included, clearly there's going to be things that we as human beings eat that didn't come from the earth. Cottage cheese is a great example of this, right? Like there's not a cottage cheese tree out there you're plucking a tub of cottage cheese from and eating. But cottage cheese is unlikely causing a primary cause of your type 2 diabetes. If you are some reason unsure about what to eat or what it means to be eating those natural foods, I want you to go to delanemd.com/better and download the 14 Days to Better Blood Sugar guide. That guide is a clear menu of what to eat. If you have done that and you aren't able to apply that long term, please set up a Better Blood Sugars assessment call. You can do that at calendly.com/DelaneMD/call, Call. So I'm going to spell it all out. CalendlyDelaneMD/Call. These Better Blood Sugars assessment calls are 45-minute Zoom calls where you and I will sit down. And we will look at your numbers, look at what you've been doing, look at what results you've gotten, and determine what your next best steps are. So make sure there's help for you. And none of this costs anything. There is help for you. If you are serious about fixing your diabetes, get the help that's available to you right now. Okay, so let's talk about the cause of type 2 diabetes and why you're diabetic. The root cause of diabetes is insulin resistance. Insulin resistance can come in two forms. One is based, thought to, the theory is that it's based on a cell receptor. So there is an insulin receptor on the cell surface of human cells that use insulin to utilize glucose, and that's the majority of our cells. When there is too much insulin in our system, what we call hyperinsulinemia, that receptor gets blocked by insulin because it's always around and there's never a time where it gets unbound. The receptor doesn't unbind to the insulin. And that means that our insulin is not working when it's blocked out. What should happen is insulin binds to the receptor, it sends a message within the cell to a port in the cell membrane, and that's a glucose port that opens up and moves glucose inside of the cell. And then inside the cell uses glucose as fuel to do the thing the cell needs to do. But when there's too much insulin in the system, that insulin receptor gets blocked out by insulin and can no longer send that message to open up the glucose port to move glucose inside. So this is insulin resistance that's caused by the cell receptor getting blocked and too much insulin. The second way that insulin resistance can occur is when these chemicals called ceramides, they're formed by fats and they're inside the cell and they block up that internal messaging. When the receptor binds to the insulin and then the receptor shoots off a message to the port that opens up and lets glucose in, those ceramides block that internal messaging inside the cell. Okay, so what we know is that our body producing too much insulin occurs when we eat foods that have concentrated carbohydrates. This is not an apple. It's not an orange. It's not a potato. It's not a nut. It's not chicken. It's not eggs even, right? Like, this is not where we get concentrated carbohydrates. Where we get concentrated carbohydrates is in foods that we have processed. Flours, sugars, artificial foods, high fructose corn syrup is one of them, right? Like, these are foods that are not found in nature anywhere. Yes, we can pick wheat from the ground, but how the earth makes wheat for us is not in the form of flour that we make bread and pizza crusts with. Even potatoes, right? Like, baked potato has a lot of really great quality ingredients. However, when we cut them up and make them super easily available, or cut them up and make them into hash brown patties or tater tots, and then they're always available to us, that is a processed food that's easily available that has high carbohydrates in it and makes us make a ton of insulin. And when all that insulin is around, it blocks out that insulin receptor. In addition, great example is this tater tot, right? They add oils. They add industrialized oils. We're not talking about butter. I mean, butter may or may not be a problem, but those are not the big players in developing this intracellular blockade, these ceramides. Those are going to be your industrialized, poor quality oils. These are your corn oils, your canola oils, your vegetable oils. These are the ones, and those are what are in all of the processed foods, okay? These are the things that we have the best evidence for being the cause of insulin resistance. Are there other causes? Maybe. Are some of them genetic? Maybe. But before we go blaming this disease of type 2 diabetes on our genes, making these dietary changes, giving your best try at these dietary changes and seeing if you improve your health with that is the only way you'll know. Lots of people will talk about diabetes being genetic. And in my brain, it is genetic in the sense that all human beings, based on our biology, are predisposed to developing insulin resistance when we eat foods that are not natural to human beings. And that's what I'm talking about with this processed food. So if your bag comes from a box, a bag, or a wrapper, you really need to critique, is this a food that I can find in this form somewhere in the world? I get bags of apples and bags of oranges, right? Like, we eat that at my house. That's a bag. But I can visualize in my brain where that apple came from on a tree. A box of crackers, like, it's difficult to visualize where the food that you put in your mouth comes from on the earth, because it doesn't. There's not a cracker patch somewhere that you're popping Ritz crackers off of. There's flour, there's sugar, there's vegetable oil that goes into a manufacturing plant, and the manufacturing plant creates a Ritz cracker that you eat. Okay, those create high insulin levels in our bodies, our human bodies. That is genetically driven. But it's not something specific to your family genes or my family genes. This is the way the human biology is. So again, the processed foods are the big issues. We can split hairs about protein shakes, and we can split hairs even about bread. But certainly, there are no-brainer foods that you know are a problem. Sodas, Cheetos, Twix, Twinkies are just not food meant for human consumption. These are what I like to call recreational foods, kind of like recreational drugs. I mean, is a one-time use of a recreational drug a problem? I mean, if they're illegal, I mean, maybe. But alcohol is a recreational drug, right? There is no, I mean, one beer isn't a problem, but it's never healthy. It's never a healthy decision. We always understand that there is a risk with the use of that. And looking at these recreational foods in the same way, I think is really powerful to help you understand and start calling these foods what they are. This term recreational foods was by Shabani Sethi-Dhali. She's a physician out of Stanford, and she coined this term, and I think it's brilliant to really determine what foods and where they're necessary and where they're okay. Recreational drugs are never necessary and they're never healthy. And recreational foods are the same. They're never necessary. Women will say this all the time, but I have to eat foods. I don't have to do drugs. I don't have to smoke cigarettes. That's why it's different. And my answer to them is you never have to eat foods that are making you sick. They are not required in any way, shape, or form. They're recreational. Remembering that. I always remind people we are the only animal on the face of the earth that does not eat the food that the earth makes for us. Squirrels do not complain about acorns and ask for pizza at night, and deer doesn't get bored with grass and ask for Chinese food. We're the animals that say, yes, I see your lettuce, earth. I see your cucumbers, earth. I see your tomatoes, but I'm going to go ahead and eat Red Bulls and Doritos. This is why we're diabetic, because we eat foods that just do not align with our biology. If you're diabetic, it's because your biology is not working correctly. And the biology isn't working correctly because we're eating foods that create that, right? Like the foods that we're eating are creating the biology that doesn't work correctly. It's not your genes. Genes dictate our biology, but it's not a genetic variation, like a genetic variation that causes cystic fibrosis or sickle cell anemia. It's not that you have some gene that's different from the rest of the world. It's more like the human genome dictates that I think of it, the human genome dictates that we must breathe oxygen from the ambient air around us. We are not like fish where we can extract oxygen from under the water. We can't do that. It doesn't align with our biology. In the same way, our genes dictate that we cannot eat these highly processed foods that create a ton of insulin in our body. It makes us sick the same way breathing underwater makes us sick. It's not a genetic variation, it's just the way our genes dictate our biology for. Whether it be oxygen consumption or the way we utilize nutrition and the way we metabolize our nutrition and our energy. So, understanding that you're not broken, I think, is really, really important because knowing that you're not broken and your body works perfectly normal for a human being, now you have that power within your hands to go out, make different choices, and create the health that you really want. So I want to talk a little bit more about why it's hard for you to let go of these foods. Because that's this addictive property that people are like, I just feel like I can't stop. So what I want to offer is that it's hard to let these foods go because they are intentionally made to be highly palatable and they light up a certain portion of your brain in an intense way that you will never find in nature. When this happens, this non-natural lighting up of your brain, right? There is nowhere in the universe, nowhere at least in nature, that you would find an Oreo with the macronutrient mix of carbohydrates, salt, and fat. Okay, so the sugar in an Oreo with the salt and the fat content of an Oreo is not found anywhere else in nature. And when we eat that, it stimulates our brain in a way that does not happen anywhere else in nature either. And this causes our brain to overemphasize this food and crave it. When your mouth overeats it, it sends even a more exaggerated reinforcing message to our brain to continue it. And then you overeat even more of that food, even when you know it's making you sick. It is not your genes. It is nothing broken about you. This is just the biology of the human being. So I always encourage women, before you decide that you need meds, give yourself the gift of trying it without meds. Understanding this information and that your body is responding to these things. And again, this is also true, I want to say, about cigarettes. This is true about drug use. This is true about alcohol. This is true about our social media. There's a great book by Judson Brewer. It's called the, his last name is Brewer. And the book, I believe, is called The Craving Mind. And he is a addiction researcher and he's brilliant. But he talks about the biochemical response of our brain on all of these different things: food, alcohol, cigarettes, drug use, porn, social media, shopping, all of it, our cell phones. He talks about all of it and the biochemical changes, the biochemical response in our brain to these things that we have a hard time letting go of. Before you decide you need meds, try to understand why it's so hard. It's so hard because all of these things are created to make you want more of them. In the end, if you make these changes and you don't see the health results, like you don't see the changes in your blood sugars, you don't see the changes in your A1C that you want to see, I want to encourage you. We are lucky enough to live with the technology where there are meds. And if you decide that you do need the meds, that's fine. But before you do that, give yourself the fighting chance to see if you actually do. Allow yourself the opportunity to see if the changes in your food choices will create the changes in your blood sugars that you want. If you find yourself resistant to letting go of these foods, this is where coaching comes in. This is where coaching can be a big help to you. Coaching uncovers some of the deep-seated beliefs that we have about these foods. If you believe that food is not a part of the cause of your disease, like if deep down you're like, I don't think it's a food. I really think it's my genetics. My mom had it, my grandma had it, everybody had it. I don't think it's me, it's the genes. If you believe that, no matter how deep down it is, you will find it increasingly challenging to get the changes, to cut those foods out because you don't believe it's the problem. That is a coaching issue. If you're believing you're addicted to the food and you can't stop them, you won't be able to stop it. This is just the way the brain works. When the rubber, it comes time for the rubber to meet the road, your brain will be like, yeah, that's not it. I'm not even going to try it. If you believe that no matter what you eat, your blood sugars won't change, then you will continue to eat in a way that supports that idea, that proves that idea. That is what coaching works on. Giving yourself the fighting chance means cutting those foods from your life and seeing what happens with your numbers. But if you have these subtle beliefs that underlie your behaviors, you have to uncover those so that you can give yourself this fighting chance. When it's hard, when you feel resistant to doing the hard thing, coaching through so that you can start to rewire that. That rewiring and the practice of doing the hard thing over and over is what makes it easier. My friend, it does get easier. It's like riding a bike. It was hard at first, and there was falls and scraped knees, and it was miserable. But the more you practiced it, the easier it got. Riding a bike would have also never been easy or masterable if you continuously thought that, my folks should just drive me everywhere I need to be. I should not have to learn how to ride a bike. If you had resistant thoughts to riding a bike, it would have always been hard to learn. It would have never gotten easier if you spent and continually thought those thoughts that about not needing to ride a bike. This is silly. I shouldn't need to do it. Same thing as learning to drive. And I don't know, I have 16-year-olds and I've taught them how to drive. I have 16-year-old twins. So I've seen two different kids. I've seen three, but two different kids back to back, like side by side, learning how to drive. My daughter like had one approach and my son had a different approach. And one, it came very easy, and the other one, it did not. And the different approaches, one had the approach of, this is going to be hard and I'm going to figure it out. And the other one had the approach of, it shouldn't be this hard and I should be able to do it without working at it. And I'll let you sit and think about who struggled more with that, right? My child that thought that this shouldn't be hard. I should just know how to do it. This is ridiculous. I shouldn't need to learn how to drive a standard transmission. That child of mine struggled harder. I love my children deeply and they're both amazing and they have strengths in different areas and I love watching them grow and become. But it was so clear to watch the power of the thought that this shouldn't be this hard. I should know how to do it already. That child of mine struggled much longer learning how to drive a car, a standard transmission primarily, although they struggled also with learning the automatic because they really didn't give themselves the opportunity to be a learner. The one that gave themselves the opportunity to just be like, oh, this is going to be a little hard, I'm going to lean into it, they learned it much quicker. So your numbers are a reflection of your biology, and most people want to work towards certain numbers. So I want to go over some of the biomarkers you want to work towards because these are the measurements that you're going to use to see if the things that you're doing are working for you. So, of course, a fasting blood sugar, you're going to want it less than 95, like somewhere between 80 and 100 most mornings is what you're looking for. An A1C less than 5.4, that is where there's the most evidence that your cells are no longer insulin resistant. A fasting serum insulin level is a lab you'll probably have to request your doctor to do. They will not do it on their own. I mean, like, that's not typically part of the workup. We look for that being less than 7. A triglyceride level, we look for that being less than 80. An LDL, we want less than 100. These are a triglyceride and LDL and HDL are all on your cholesterol panel. So an LDL less than 100 and HDL, you want that above 60. That's your good cholesterol. You want it higher. There is a liver enzyme. It's called an ALT. It's also called an SGPT. And we want that number less than 17. There are things you can do at home. You can do a hip to waist ratio. In women, you want it less than 0.8. So you take your measurement of your hips and you take your measurement of your waist. So the hips, you're going to want to measure at the greater trochanter. I measure there. That's where you're going to want to measure. And then you're going to want to measure your waist circumference at your umbilicus. That's where you're going to want to measure those. And that ratio, dividing the waist number by the hip number, you want that to be 0.8. Women will want a waist circumference less than 35 inches. That's another measurement. These are things you can do at home. We want a blood pressure less than 120 over 70. And I will tell you, that's more based on my experience. That's not necessarily a number I got out of the literature. And then lastly, you're going to look for a triglyceride to HDL ratio. So the triglyceride off of your cholesterol panel divided by your HDL, that division, that number that you get from that division problem should be greater than 1.65 in women. Okay, that's what we look like. Actually, it should be that 1.65 or less. I'm sorry. Anybody who has it above 1.65, they have a worse metabolic health, is what that is an indicator of. So those are the numbers that you want to shoot for. And that's kind of what we look at to see, are we metabolically healthy? Are we insulin resistant? So looking at all those and bringing those into a normal range is what we're shooting for. But understanding that there's not one number and that it's not really related to, like, all of these things are heavily impacted from everything from our diet to our exercise to our sleep to our stress. If those numbers, you're looking at them and you're like, oh, mine are not where they should be. Maybe one or two is out of range. And that doesn't necessarily mean that you have any kind of insulin resistance. But if 60% of these numbers are out of range, and you kind of are looking at what you're eating and you're like, oh, I know I should be eating things that come from the earth, but the majority of what I eat doesn't. You should probably assume that there is some insulin resistance happening there. And then from there, making a decision about how you want to handle that. Many, many people, again, they're like, it's genetics. I have no control over it. And they don't even actually look at the numbers because they believe there isn't any control that they have over it. Here are the numbers. Compare your numbers to these kind of ideal or optimal numbers, and then decide, does the diet that I eat have some adjustments that I can make? Because if it does, start making those adjustments before you start to decide that you're going to be tied to meds. Now, my friend, again, there's nothing wrong with being on meds. It's just understanding that the idea that they make us healthy The meds don't make us healthy. The foods that we eat have made us sick. Changing those foods is what creates real health. And understanding that, because nobody, the healthcare industry is not going to be telling you this. Okay. So that is what I have. There's a lot of science in this episode. So if you have any questions, email me at delaine@delainemd.com. If you want to set up a Better Blood Sugars assessment call and you don't want to go to the Calendly link, that's fine. You can email me, delaine@delainemd.com. Lastly, I have an ask. Like and rate this podcast for me, please. Use your podcast player, like and rate it. The more ratings and reviews this podcast has, the more the podcast player presents it to new people. When we understand that insulin resistance affects 93% of Americans, understand that getting this message out there is beneficial to others. Help me get the word out that people do not need to be sick and tied to the healthcare industry or the medical industry in the United States for the rest of their life. It is possible to live healthy. People need to hear this and they need to hear what the root cause is. And that's what this podcast is really dedicated to. So if you could rate and review the podcast and more people hear that, that would be great. Last thing, I want you to keep listening. Keep avoiding the foods that are making you sick. Keep making the choice for your health, your vitality, and your longevity. I'll be back next week. Bye-bye.